From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And this is Friday, which means we begin with our reporter roundtable, where we talk about what's making news across the state. Today, our focus is on Champaign-Urbana and the Metro East. Joining us now is May Antar, General Assignment Reporter for our home station, Illinois Public Media. May, welcome back. Good to have you on again.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with us, Brian Moline, who is the editor for Education, Business, and Economic Stories at KWMU, St. Louis Public Radio. Some of our listeners will also remember he was the original Brian M. at Illinois Public Media, where he was longtime local morning edition host. Brian, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be back on the air.
So, May, I want to begin with you, and this is a more serious story. There's been a push to call for a Gaza ceasefire resolution at the city level in Urbana. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so a lot of people, different organizations have come together, different faith-based organizations have come together, Muslims, Jews, Unitarian Universalists have come together to push Nikki Budzinski specifically to publicly call for a ceasefire and basically meet with her Palestinian constituents and get a better grasp on what's happening on their end to really get a ceasefire through at the city level and the state level. In the city level, there have been many people who have brought forth resolutions to kind of get the city of Urbana to call for a ceasefire and have a resolution to that effect. That was in January, and finally last week they were able to pass one. It wasn't the same one that was presented at first in January, but they were able to pass one. There's going to be another vote on that next week. But really just a lot of people, that city council meeting was filled with people. Like outside the door, there was not enough room to have enough people in there and there was a lot of chanting. It was pretty heated. But a lot of people really want this to be happening at all levels of government.
You know, I think people feel so powerless to affect what they are seeing on the news or hearing from family and friends who live in the region. You know, talk about why, though, they think that, you know, why they want a mid-sized city in central Illinois to weigh in on, you know, what is an international issue.
I think their main goal is that having someone say, you know, even at the city level, hey, this is wrong. Hey, we need a ceasefire. They're hoping that that'll kind of snowball into a bigger thing where more people and more people higher up and people more important, people that can actually make that change will be able to kind of hop on the bandwagon, if you will, and kind of get that ball rolling, so to speak. So, and it's just kind of, they don't want to be complicit in what they're calling a genocide. They need to do something. And I feel like a lot of people just really need their locally that to happen so they can kind of feel that they're doing something so that maybe something will be able to happen at a bigger scale across the sea.
And you mentioned that the language wasn't quite what they had hoped for initially. What I don't know if you can talk about what the final phrasing was and what they plan to do next. What does this mean for their movement?
The original resolution that they had presented, a lot of people spoke out and said that it didn't have enough Jewish involvement in that resolution. And so it wasn't actually put on the agenda to begin with. But this one that was passed, now a lot of Palestinians are saying that there wasn't any Palestinian or Muslim involvement in this version of the resolution that was passed. And so a lot of people are kind of disappointed. I think they were disappointed, but different people were disappointed before. Now different people are disappointed now. But it's just kind of, I think a lot of people are feeling left out in the conversation and that their voices aren't accurately being depicted or heard the way they want them to.
Yeah. And then you also mentioned U.S. Representative Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski. There was sort of on a separate track, activists pushing her on this. And she's, of course, a national figure. What happened there? Do they feel like that was productive for them?
Yeah. So they had a protest, a march calling her out, and then they were able calling on her to call for a ceasefire. And then they were able to actually set up a meeting with her, the UC Jews for Ceasefire, local Palestinians, Unitarian Universalists, all kind of hopped on that meeting and was able to speak with her on this issue. And for the most part, they said that they were able to, they felt that they were able to get to most of the topics that they wanted to get to, and that they were kind of getting her to understand where they were coming from, except for they really wanted Nikki to call also for the end of providing U.S. military aid to Israel, as well as provide humanitarian aid to Gaza and call for a ceasefire. She wasn't willing to budge on the ending military aid to Israel, but on everything else, she was beginning to be a little bit more like, okay, yes, I see what you're talking about. And after that meeting, she posted on Twitter, hey, you know, we need to call for a ceasefire. Killing is unacceptable. So I feel like they feel like they've been making some changes, and they feel like they've gotten through to some degree. And I know that there's another rally in Springfield, actually, calling on Nikki Budzinski again for a ceasefire. So I know that there's still more efforts and people are still trying. It's not really over for them, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to have one more sort of story you've been following on related to this that I want to talk about. And you had a report on a Palestinian student at a middle school in Champaign. I gather the underlying incident happened back in October. There was a mm-hmm. teacher, these junior high students, or like I said, middle school students talking about Hamas and the attack on Israel. And the student has Palestinian heritage, and the teacher pointed that out to the classmates, really singled her out.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? So I understand this came to light like months later at a school board meeting, right?
Yeah. So the mother of the student tried to reach out to different people at the middle school and the school board, but she wasn't really getting much of what she wanted from them. She was asking for various things, like, first of all, to fire the teacher who had basically singled out her daughter, pretty much equating her with Hamas, saying, hey, this is what Hamas looks like, are Palestinians, and this girl is Palestinian. That's what they look like. So she was very angered by that. That was a couple of days after October 7th, and a few days before Wadia Fahumi, he was stabbed to death in the Chicago suburbs.
This is the little boy, yeah, in the Chicago, right? Yeah.
Yes. So she's very stressed, and she feels like her daughter was put in danger, and her daughter was traumatized. She was crying. She didn't feel safe going back to school. And actually, following that incident in class, another student called her a terrorist. And he was in that class where the teacher equated her with Hamas. So she was trying to get something. She wanted the teacher fired, or at least some sensitivity training, some therapy for her daughter, and some other things. But she wasn't able to get any of those things. They did eventually offer therapy, limited therapy, but that was contingent on her signing a non-disclosure agreement, which she was not willing to do. She felt that was unfair, and it didn't cover all the things, and they refused sensitivity training, which she didn't understand. But then she went to school board meeting, and they ended up cutting her off. A lot of people went over their time, and she was the only one where they kind of, hey, that's it. So.
Hmm. Well, I suspect we will hear more on this story in the weeks ahead. May Antar, thank you for sharing that. And let me just remind listeners, it's the 21st show. We're doing our Friday reporter roundtable where we talk about local news from across the state. And I want to bring Brian Moline into the conversation now from KWMU, St. Louis Public Radio. And Brian, one of your colleagues had a story on a study comparing the experiences, I'm going to see if I can phrase this precisely, but comparing the experiences of people who live in Southern Illinois and people who become sort of right-wing radicalized. And I guess there's a lot of overlap in that Venn diagram, right? What's the story there?
Yeah, as you said, we want to be precise here because it found that people in Southern Illinois in the study reported higher levels of both adult bullying and life difficulties like losing a job or a relationship. And those are two potential risk factors that could make people more likely to become radicalized and commit domestic terrorism, according to the authors. It doesn't necessarily mean that people in Southern Illinois are more likely to do that. It just means that there are some risk factors there that we need to be aware of.
What are the sort of practical implications of this, I guess, or, you know, what to what end is that? What do we do with this study information? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I think there are a few things to note here. It did also find that, you know, Southern Illinois residents are, you know, more likely to interact with their peers than some people in other states. That's something that kind of mitigates some of what they found. But I think they're doing a few things. They're making law enforcement at least aware of this, so that, you know, that law enforcement just has this information. I think it's mostly it's just something to be aware of and something to try to temper a little bit if possible. You know, I don't know that there's any concrete action items you can take. I think it's just something that the researchers wanted to make the public and law enforcement aware of, just to try and keep people safe, I think.
And I gather there's going to be a public presentation about this later in March on the SIU Edwardsville campus, which I don't know if I mentioned that, but that's where this research originated. All right, let's stick with politics and sort of, I guess, the right side of that, and move to the Republican primary for the 12th congressional district. Brian, candidate Mike Bost is going up against Congressman Mike Bost is going up against former Republican gubernatorial nominee Darren Bailey. And they were both vying for former President Donald Trump's endorsement. What happened?
Well, former President Trump endorsed Mike Bost, the incumbent, in that race. And I know that certainly Darren Bailey has been kind of a darling of the right wing of the Republican Party. And certainly he had been endorsed by former President Trump before, including in the Illinois governor's race. So I think he was kind of counting on getting the Trump endorsement in this race. It kind of turned into a contest of who could be more Trumpy. And when the former president did endorse Mike Bost, I'm not sure what that means for sure, but it would seem to me that it would make it a little more difficult for Darren Bailey to get traction, especially against an incumbent like Bost, who's been in the public eye for quite some time.
Yeah, and in Southern Illinois for quite some time. 10 years, right? Now he will have been in Congress at the end of this current term. All right, May Antar, sticking with politics, Congresswoman Mary Miller and Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski, a Republican and a Democrat. You don't often hear them talked about together, but they did come together in an effort to help keep a downstate, not a post office, but a processing center, I guess, for the U.S. Postal Service from being eliminated. What's the story there?
Yeah. Like you said, Nikki Budzinski and Mary Miller don't really agree on many things. But they came together and they sent a letter to the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, kind of urging against the downsizing, basically. The local distribution center here on Mattis Avenue, saying that they had many concerns, first and foremost, about the downsizing resulting in about 180 employees being asked to relocate to, I think, two separate locations, but both about 2 hours away. And they wrote this letter, and they also addressed concerns regarding how deliveries might be delayed, where things are already being delayed and they don't need that extra delay. And they asked the Postmaster General to answer 5 questions on this downsizing by, I think, March 22nd of this month, to kind of get a better, more clear grasp on the impact of this. And their Budzinski specifically is calling on her constituents, people, to kind of put their input. I know there's a public input meeting on Tuesday at the YMCA here on campus, where people are able to voice their concerns on the subject.
Yeah, and I got to say, from personal experience, I know that that Champaign Processing Center, even though it's in Champaign, like I've tracked packages going to Springfield and elsewhere in central Illinois, it does handle a pretty big region. Brian Moline, just about 30 seconds left. I do want to touch on a story out of East St. Louis briefly. I understand the city is looking for some help from the state in order to help fund its pensions. What's the story there?
Yeah, there's a bit of a conflict between the East St. Louis Police and Fire Pension Boards and the city government in East St. Louis. Basically, the city government hasn't contributed to those pension funds since last September. So now the pension boards are asking the Illinois Comptroller to seize state money that's been allocated to the city government and use it to fund those pensions. That is something that did happen back in 2019, and the pension boards are asking the comptroller to make that happen once again.
Goodness, East St. Louis is one of those cities that seems to can't catch a break sometimes. All right, Brian Moline is editor of Education and Business and Economic Stories at KWMU, St. Louis Public Radio. May Antar is a reporter at Illinois Public Media. May and Brian, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian.
Coming up after a short break, we're going to be talking about state and national politics. There are very few candidates on the primary ballot this year. We're going to talk with a state reporter about that, and then efforts to avert yet another federal government shutdown at the national level. That's all coming up after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.